session number 9423, reel 3.
Mr. Plimmer, Reel 3. You were describing the British lines in terms of whether we had a strategic advantage or not.
Well, they weren't haphazard positions, they were well prepared. By the time I got there, there'd been people there before me, and the headquarter people who were in charge of it and made proper plans for the defence of the thing, and the defensive positions were already in position, in a most advantageous position. So all I had to do with my pals was just go and occupy them in our turn. Had I been there any longer, somebody else would have come along and we would have gone somewhere else. As a matter of fact, we were due to go to Livergua, a place called Livergua, in a day or two after I'd been there, but we didn't go. Livergua was a little farther towards the front than where we were, a place that was badly damaged and a lot of people killed there. That was one of our companies were there. We were going to relieve them and they were going to go to, probably come back to us. So all the positions were already in position. They weren't just haphazard places where people thought there might be a nice place to stay. They were well prepared as well as possible. So at Jean Court, what we had on the top of this sunken road, we had four machine guns in positions there. And we had a bloke on sentry all day long. He was walking about on the top. And at night time, about 50 yards down the slope, they had a machine gun in a pit, an old shell hole made into a machine gun emplacement. I don't know what good he was supposed to be, but we had a band on duty all night long, 2 hours on, 2 hours off. And there was another one about some distance away from us, me, I don't know how far away, in the same sort of position. So that we had these four guns on duty all day long, and you had this one gun down in the valley at night time. In the valley, it was on the slope, doing sentry duty.
How many hours duty did you have actually on a machine gun at any one time?
2 hours on. We stood 2 hours on and 4 hours off.
And that was what, working through the night or during the day as well?
All day and night.
Were there any other duties that you had to...
No, there was nothing to do. All we had to do was keep the place tidy, see the ammunition was well provided for, and keep the guns clean and be alert and all that sort of thing. But there was no digging to do, no trenches to be repaired. People used to go for rations and so...
Were you actually in any of the ration parties?
Can't remember, no. They didn't go far for them.
And what about getting water?
There was water available.
Because that would be quite important for the machine gun.
Well, there was water in Jean Court. We used to get it from, I don't know whether it came from springs or wells or what.
Mm-hmm. Could you describe the daily routine of your job? Did you have stand to in the morning?
No, we didn't do anything at all. We just woke up, had our breakfast, and you knew when you was on duty to go on sentry go, and you used to be on there, and four guns would be standing there in case they were ready for use.
Mm-hmm. And there were no night patrols or activities
No, the enemy must have been, I couldn't say how far away, maybe half a mile away, maybe a mile, I don't know. He was over the ridge, you see. Mm-hmm. Never saw him until the day he came.
Well, you said until the day he came. Were you expecting an attack? Was there any sign of increased military activity or bombardment?
No, they never bombarded us at all till they started the attack. We knew the night before that they were going to come over in the morning. They captured prisoners and all that sort of thing. They captured a prisoner, then he would know when they were going to come over. He might not tell them, but he'd be very, very anxious to get out of it. You see, they pick the thing up like that sort of thing, you see. So that we knew well enough. We had our gas masks inspected and all that sort of thing. We're all ready for him. And I went on duty on this blinking gun that was down in the slope at 4 o'clock on the morning of the 21st. And at 20 minutes to five, he started his bombardment.
This would be what month, by the way?
21st day of March, 1918.
Okay.
He started his bombardment at 20 minutes to five. And they say, I don't know whether it's true or not, that he had 8,000 guns, said to be the biggest concentration of artillery ever used in France up to then. And he bombarded our lines for 5 hours. And during that 5 hours, most of that 5 hours was in that blinking shell over this machine gun. I don't know about the bloke, what happened to him, never seen him. I know my machine gun was smashed up in the very early, but I lay in the shell all this time, expecting to be blown to bits, but it didn't happen. I never got it. I was just down in there. The shells were falling all round.
What was your reaction? This was the first time you were actually in action.
I don't know. I didn't know what to think about it. And then I began to realise that I was really in danger, and that I didn't think I'd make it. And then eventually when
Can I just stay with that for a moment? What did you actually do? Did you stay?
I just couldn't do anything.
Were you with other men at that time?
Big man?
Were you with other
men?
No,
I was all alone. There was only one sentry on this gun all night. A 2 hour stint, you see. I went on from 4 till 6, but this bombardment started at 20 to 5.
Where was the rest of the crew?
Well, they were in the sunken road. They were back, you see. As I said before, I didn't know what the use of this gun was, stuck down there in the middle of the night, but they had it there. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, I lost it. It all right, was blown up, it, you know. But I never got touched. I was down in the trench, you know. There was a trench, like a grave, you know.
Yes.
I was down in there.
And the gun was on the parapet,
the gun was on the top. When the shelling came over, the gun must have got hit. Not hit, but, you know, damaged. I could see that. It was all lying in cockeyed, so I never bothered about it. I just sat on the ammunition box. I couldn't do anything at all. Mm-hmm. Until later on, when the bombardment lifted a little bit, I scuppered off back to the sunken ruin.
And what was going on there?
Well, first of all, it was foggy. It was one of those days, one in a million. It had never been foggy there for months, but it just happened to be foggy. That was one of the hazards that we didn't cater for. Had it been fine, the Germans wouldn't have broke through so easily. So it was foggy. There was a heavy concentration of gas. I wore my gas mask all the time. And when I got back up to the top of the hill, to the there was a company of the Sussex Regiment digging a lot of trenches up there. So we had to set to and help them dig the trenches. We made this trench arrangement there, and we had our guns up there. They only had two guns there. One of the other ones had gotten out. We only had a couple of guns up there, and the Sussex and us just waited there for the Germans to come.
Had there been many injured in the bombardment?
Been a lot killed, yeah. Been a lot killed in there. They were all down the dugout, the injured people were down the dugout there. Goodness knows what happened to them. We had to leave them there when we retired.
What other activities were you involved in then, apart from?
Well, we completed this redoubt sort of thing, though, and we just waited. And the bombardment had finished, went on till about 10 o'clock, 9:45 or something. And then about 10 o'clock, they advanced. You see, it was fine, man. Beautiful day, no fog, no gas, no nothing, just a few odd shells. And some of our people were coming back, retiring from in front of us, and then. We just waited, then all of a sudden we saw the Germans come over the hill, waves of them.
How far away would that be when you first saw them?
I should think about half a mile away, something like that.
So they'd be in range of the machine guns?
Probably a little more. Oh yeah, they were in machine gun range. Mm. So we only had a couple of guns, but the infantry had several Lewis guns and all rifle fire. And we were down to nothing. There was only me and one bloke on this one gun. The other gun was, I don't know where they were, somewhere they were in. And they came down this slope and we just fired at them. And when they were about halfway down the slope, the officer who was in charge of us took me and my mate off that place where we were and took us up onto the escarpment so that we could, you know, and went up on the escarpment there.
So what field of fire and what range of view would you have from
there? We could fire right into the village from there. We could fire, but we were exposed, you see. We're out, absolutely exposed. There was no shelter of any kind. We just put the gun up, fired a couple of belts, and we had to get out of it. We had to retire ourselves when we joined a company who were in reserve somewhere, a little bit.
How far did you retreat back?
Oh, I did back about 300 or 400 yards. To where there was some reserve people in some disused buildings. So we linked up with them. We stayed with them for about 3 or 4 days.
Yes, can you describe what happened next then, after having linked up with these people?
Well,
the Germans advanced up to the regime core itself.
The last I saw of the Germans coming down a hill, they were coming down a hill and we were firing at them, but we were being fired at. Bullets were flying all around us. They were firing from a good way. They weren't accurate, so we decided to get out of it, see. And we went back with our gun to this bit of a building and we attached ourselves to them. Then the Germans, I don't know what happened to all our people that was left behind on the ridge. I do know because I met a couple of our people 3 or 4 days later. Those that weren't killed were taken prisoner, and the wounded were left in the dugout, so I don't know what happened to them. Well, I joined up with this crowd that were on reserve. I stuck with them till the Germans came over the ridge. We had a go at them from there. Then we retired again to a place called, I think it was called Hervilly. And we stopped there till night time. And then at night time, we just got out of it. We didn't get out of it. We got ordered to move, you know, mm-hmm. join up.
Can you remember your feelings, actually, being in action, being shot at for the first time?
No, I don't think I had any particular feelings about it. I knew it was happening. And I thought, well, what were shooting at me for? That sort of thing. Yeah. Well, my mate, incidentally, he got wounded. And I never saw him after the night. I don't know what happened to him. He got wounded at Hervilly and I was left alone. A terrible experience, you know.
Well, I can imagine it is. I'd be interested to know, you know, how you reacted to it at that time, because, I mean, a lot of your friends must have been killed in that point.
Well, you didn't seem to have much personal reaction to it. You just felt that you was involved in something that was going on, and you had no means of controlling it. You just had to do what you were told to do. And we went out up, we just said, go up on the escarpment. We just went. We didn't say why, or we've got a good target here. We just went up there and stopped up there.
Can you remember being frightened?
Can't remember being frightened. Not in a way that you would be. Not in a way you are when you have a nightmare or anything like that. Well, you was aware that there was danger going on. There was people being killed all around you. But, you know, you get that feeling that it won't happen to me. You know, that sort of thing. It was a muddled sort of feeling.
When you were shooting your gun, could you actually see the bullets hitting the German?
Yes, could. Yes, you were firing into them. Mm. You couldn't say whether you killed them or whether they went down there for shelter or not. But it stayed down a long time. Mm. I wasn't firing the gun on the escarpment. My mate was firing the gun, but they were all that far away. They were just coming into the village, and we were pumping stuff into them. So they must have lost a lot of people.
Can you remember any particular feelings you had at that moment?
Not a bit, no. Can't remember. Just thought, oh, we're hitting them. That's all.
Right, if we return then to Hervilly, which you said you evacuated at
night. Yeah, we
stayed
into Hervilly till night time, and then at night time we marched off back in some sort of order across the fields.
You say in some sort of order. Was there a fair amount of chaos by this time?
No, they were straggling back, really. They weren't walking back individually. There were small groups, you know. We went to a place called Vrains, V-R-I-N, Vrains. That's where we linked up with the other people. And from then on, we just took part in what one might call a retreating engagement, you know, covering engagement. They never broke through, you know. They never broke through.
Can you describe that retreating engagement? What exactly did you do?
I didn't know what was going on. I wasn't directing it. But we got more guns, we got reorganised.
How did that happen?
Well, we went back and we got to various places where we sort of got reorganised and into little parties again. And then we were sent to a place where we would have to put our gun, and if the Germans came, we would have to fire them. We got as far as the River Somme. And I remember we lined the our side of the River Somme with the guns there. But we blew the bridge. That was a place called St. Christ, where we blew a bridge, where I went over. And the first village on our side was called Misery. I remember that very well. And we just did that day after day, went to various places where we held them up. Sometimes I didn't see them. Sometimes some people had a bad time, you know. Mm. Just depended how the Germans attacked.
Were you in action at all at that time?
Oh, yes. We were at it all the time, yeah. Every day there was, you know, but never in any intensity. You might go to a field and you might see that the Germans were coming down a road, and you let them have a few, and then you get the orders to retire somewhere else. You didn't stand and you know, in where you were. It was manoeuvring back, you know. Some places they made a stand, but it was necessary. That would be probably because some people were trapped and they had to hold them up while they got out, sort of thing. But generally speaking, it was an orderly sort of retreat, everybody covering everybody else, until we finally got down to Villers Bretonneau, where the Australians took over there and they stopped them there.
Can you describe the effect the retreat had on you personally? I mean, physically it must have been very tiring.
It was very tiring. Very fatiguing. Got the idea that it would never end, and where were we going, you know, and we didn't seem to know where we were going or what we were doing. What we should do didn't seem to be relevant to the outcome of the war. We just know we were being pushed back, but we had no idea what the headquarters knew. We were just pawns in the game.
Did you feel that at the time?
Oh, I don't think I did. As I told you before, we just obeyed our orders. There was plenty of discipline. There was no signs of anybody mutinying, anything like that. Well, discipline too, very disciplined, you know.
Did you feel that perhaps the war was lost at that point? You had arrived in the front, and the first thing you're doing is retreating.
I didn't feel so. We knew what was going on in our mind. We knew actually what was taking place. We knew that they were trying to split the French and the British. This was all explained to us. They were trying to split us and get behind before the Americans got in the war. That was their main German idea. But their attack petered out.
Who explained that
the officer told us what was going on? I think the Germans they got into our lines and found food that they'd never seen before, you know, and drunk and all that. So they petered out a little bit towards the end of the war, during the end of the attack.
Did you have any evidence for believing that at the time?
Well, we left all our canteens behind, full of stuff, you know. And all our, you know, big canteens full of things that I'm sure that they'd never seen before.
Did you feel that they hadn't seen them at the time, or is that looking back now?
Well, we had an idea. We weren't told that. We got that impression that they were having a good time on the stuff that we were leaving behind.
Did anyone suggest that the Germans, in fact, were running short of supplies and the men weren't as well supplied as
the prisoners.
Oh, really?
They were the source of information, you know. We took prisoners as well as them, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. They took a lot of our prisoners. We took a lot of theirs, too. They were glad to get out of it, their people, you know.
Were you actually responsible for taking any prisoners?
No, I never took any, no.
Did you actually see any prisoners close at hand?
Yes, I've seen them taken, yes. That was the infantry used to do all that, you know.
Were you able to speak to any of the prisoners? Or?
No. I didn't, no.
To return to this retreat, roughly how many miles did you march, do you think?
About 20 miles, I think.
All told?
All told.
In how many days?
I think it started... Well, it must have been about nearly a fortnight, I should think. What I can recollect of it, you know. Mm. I've never bothered to read any books about it. I know quite well that most of the books are written by people who've only got it second hand. You know...
Did you have much opportunity for catching sleep and catching up on rest?
No, you sleep where you could. No. Never had much sleep. Well, there was no organised daily duty. No, you just had to get up and go, and go where you were sent, and keep where you could. And they gave us, we got grub. I mean, there were people behind us who were feeding us. We had reinforcements as well, you know.
You say you got your food. Was that regularly, or was it just again? I just have to arrive.
Perhaps we would say we were at X, and we would go to Y. Well, at Y there would be some grub there, sort of thing, you know. We didn't go back 5 yards. Went back about a mile or two, that sort of thing, you know. It was all organised. It wasn't a rugged retreat.
Once you got back beyond the Somme and Villers Bretonneau, what happened then?
Well, when we left the Somme at St. Christ, I should think we were about halfway between our starting point and our destination. We just moved back daily, as we had been doing before, occupying positions pointed out to us, and we'd occupy these positions, and sometimes we wouldn't see anybody at all. We'd just be there. And then we would have to retire without seeing anybody, just to keep the line in order. We weren't there to halt them. Mm-hmm. We were there to sort of delay them, sort of thing.
Where did the retreat stop?
Well, it stopped, as far as I was concerned, at Villers Bretonneux.
Right. And what did you do there?
Well, at Villers Bretonneux, I think we arrived there at night time. I remember the place being heavily shelled and ambulances being blown up. I can see in my mind's eye now an ambulance being blown to smithereens in the square at Villers Bretonneux. We just marched out of the square to a point, you know, a gathering point, and then next morning we marched away onto a railway to Amiens, on a train to Amiens.
And that was what, returning to rest?
That was that when point. We were relieved. That was when the Australians' visions took over from the Fifth Army. Mm-hmm. Our crowd went into Amiens, and from Amiens we went down to a place on the coast called... can't remember it now. Then we went finished up at St. Valery.
I see. Can you describe the mood of the men, having sort of been taken out of the line and had that retreat?
Well, they were all fully exhausted, glad it was over, just about done up, you know. Lost a lot of friends, but bewildered in a way.
Would you say your attitude to the war had changed as a result?
Oh, you think it had. I thought it was a glorious adventure at the start. I didn't think it was then. No. A proper eye-opener it was.
Mm. What happened at St. Valery?
Well, we stopped there for about a month or more, where we recuperated. We had a long, long rest. We got a lot of reinforcements. Got all that new equipment and everything, and formed ourselves into a proper company.
Mm-hmm. And what pastimes did you enjoy whilst you were there?
Oh, lots there. Lots of things. Went swimming and all that sort of thing down in the town.
Were there special entertainments laid on for the troops?
No, we had to, you know. I don't remember going to any arranged things, but we just, enjoyed ourselves, laid down in the sunshine at St. Valery.
Were there any organised games for them?
No, can't remember any. There may have been. I didn't take part in any if there was. We just rested. We didn't do anything at all. We just got re-equipped. New guns, new equipment, new clothes. A new outlook, you know. Sort of.
How do you mean a new outlook?
Well, we got our minds was rejuvenated again. We got rid of the battle fatigue, if you follow what I mean. Mm. And then we spent all our time telling all the reinforcements how it was like.
Did they believe you?
Well, they had to.
Did you have any particular duties whilst you were at rest? Did you have to go on parades and things like that?
No, we didn't do very little at all. We just used to go on parade in the morning, I think, sort of a roll call, and that's all. There may have been fatigues, but nothing specific. Probably not fatigue or two, you know.
Mm-hmm. Were you able to ride home and...
Oh, yes, right. Well, we could go into the town in St. Valery. We used to sit on the seats on the plage, you know.
You were able to say to say what you've been through.
Well, I couldn't speak at all French. You might know a word or two now, but I didn't then.
No, I meant in terms of writing home.
Oh yeah, I couldn't write home and tell him everything. He had to be censored, you know. The mail was censored. Mm-hmm.
Did you receive mail from home then?
Yes, Well, that's an odd thing. We got mail from home when we were retiring. It used to come up with the Russians, you know.
Mm. Right. What would you say the attitude of the French civilians were to the British troops in St. Valery?
The French?
Yes, the French civilians.
I didn't have much to do with them, really. I don't know whether they were fed up with the British or what, but as I say, I couldn't speak any French, so I didn't have any...
How long were you at St. Valery for? You said it was a month, did you say?
Oh, may have been a month or more, may have been less, may have been more, say a month, round about a month.
And what happened to you after that?
Well, the division was moved up to the Loos sector. And we marched up to Loos, bit by bit, stopping at villages here and villages there. And finally we went into the frontline trenches at Loos.
Did you know when you left St. Valery that that's where you were going to go?
Yes, we knew.
Did you know what to expect?
Well, we told it was quiet there, one of those quiet sectors. There are places which are quiet, in name only, of course, you know. Hmm. Where they're just holding
on. How do you mean? In name only.
Well, you get two sets of trenches, yours and theirs. Now, if the enemy was to go up and go up and you occupied that, it wouldn't be any use to you. I mean, the ground behind it's not got no tactical value, but you've got to stop them from having it, you see. So you hold the line. You lure in case they make an attack. Although, as I say, in many instances, it's not worth an attack. But at the same time, there are all sorts of activity going on, shelling, gas, machine gunners, snipers, all that's going on. It just depends upon who's on the other side of the line. If it's the Prussians, well, you know you're in for a rough time, you see. If it was the Saxons, you could expect a less rough time. Now, if the Scots were in our line, the Germans would know they were in for it. But if, say, the Somersets were in, they would think, well, they're not so bad as the Scots. That sort of attitude. Then you might get some drunken major in a German and say, oh, I'm going to give them hell today, and he might open up with all his batteries and catch hundreds of people unaware. That sort of thing went on. And that was what they called holding the line. It was supposed to be quiet. It was quiet insofar that there was no organised battle impending. That sort of thing.
Fine, thank you.
You could be in the line there for a whole period and never lose a man, and at the same time you could have your whole company wiped out just going in there. That's the sort of thing that obtained up there.
Mm-hmm. Right, well, when you reached Loos, can you remember what the terrain was like?
Well, it was very, very dry there. It was chalky ground. There were deep dugouts. The trenches were dry there, pretty dry, compared with what they were in other places.
Was it a full system of trenches existed there?
Was it?
Was there a full system of trenches?
Oh, yes, there was a front line, a support line, and a reserve line. Oh, yeah.
How deep were the trenches?
Well, I should think they were about 8 foot deep. Deep enough to keep a man's head from sticking above the parapet, you know. I'm standing in duckboard. And, of course, there was the parapet on which the man stood with his rifle at the shoulder. Then all the machine gun posts and bombing posts and listening posts and all the lot, everything was there.
How far would you say the British lines were from the enemy?
Well, it varied. It could be anything up to 50 yards or less, or up to half a mile or more. It varied in places. I have heard it being as low as 20, 30 yards, but I don't know where that would be. But then when we were on the Somme on the 21st of March, the enemy were well over half a mile away, probably a mile, as far as we knew. It all depended on the terrain and that sort of thing. Of course, the trenches weren't all in one solid line. That they were sometimes up on and down. It all depended on the terrain, you see. In some places, they could see into our trenches and we could see into their trenches.
This was at Loos, you were describing.
Yeah. Actually see. Not the whole length of the trench, but there would be little areas where you could catch a glimpse of the. And that's where the snipers used to operate. Anybody was foolish enough not to duck down when it said sniper, well, they stood a chance of being killed.
When it said sniper, was there actual little sign?
Oh, there were signs all over the place. Oh, yes, signs all over the trenches. All the trenches were named. Piccadilly Circus and Regent Street and all that sort of thing.